Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Bill Dickerson, attorney at law for Irwin, Tardy & Morris. They're a law firm that does all sorts of different legal things. Bill, what are they famously known for?
Well, we're a general practice. We have four offices around the state, one in Portland, one in Brunswick, one in Newport, and one in Augusta. We do everything from legislative representation in Augusta to we have a very diversified practice. One of the areas that I do a lot of work in is employment law. I do a fair amount of work in employment law, but we also do divorces and auto accident cases and wills and trusts and estates. So we try to – and workers' compensation, too. We cover the waterfront.
Sure. You do all sorts of employment law. So, you know, I think one of the things that we wanted to talk a little bit about today is the fact you've had an interesting career. You're an attorney by trade.
I am.
You're also a trainer
by trade.
You're actually a trainer with Dale Carnegie. Tell me how that all came about. Tell me about how someone in the attorney world might get into training, because to be honest with you, that seems kind of like a stretch.
Well, it isn't really so much of a stretch. I thought it might be a little bit of a stretch when I first did it. When I first got out of law school almost 40 years ago, I remember that I was practicing law, and I felt pretty competent in knowing what I was doing as far as knowing the law, but I was very nervous when I had to go into court. I was very nervous negotiating with people, talking with people. So I saw an ad in the newspaper for the Dale Carnegie course. And I took it. I took it in the late 1970s, and I found it to be a very valuable experience. And I found that I was talking to my clients better, that I felt more comfortable when I was in court. I just felt generally better about it. I really liked the program. And the person, the sponsor for the area, the franchisee for Dale Carnegie in Maine, asked me if I would like to become a trainer. And my first thought was, yes, this is a good way to keep up my confidence and to develop my speaking skills further. But gradually, it became a real avocation for me and a real passion for me. And I just continued to do it, and I've been doing it now for almost 38 years. And it morphs beautifully into my practice in several different ways. First of all, it keeps me being a trainer, standing up in front of rooms, taking questions from people. Doing that actual exercise keeps me sharp when I have to be in the courtroom. It also keeps me very sharp and helpful when I'm talking to my clients and dealing with my clients and dealing with other attorneys. The other thing, though, that it does, it's been a practice builder for us. It brings in clients, but I find the two are not incompatible at all. I find them to be they really work very well together, and you know, I can't imagine doing one without the other.
When you're talking about somebody who is out there in the marketplace today, right? Somebody who is potentially looking and saying, "Hey, you know, I'm doing whatever I'm doing in HR. I'm a business owner. I'm a business leader." What are some of the skills that you would say today is critical for them to be able to grow in terms of their growth today as a leader?
As a leader itself, as a person, just to be a leader, I think that there are really three things that a leader really needs to have. He or she needs, I think, to really have an understanding and an empathy for the people that work for them. I think people today expect a lot more from the boss than just that guy in the corner office. I think that they want people that care about them, that are interested in them, that think about them. And so the empathy part is really important for keeping good people. The other thing I think, and it goes with that, is I think that they have to be good listeners. I think that bosses today, leaders today, need to be able to hear what people are telling them, and they have to be open to that. They have to be approachable. one of the things that I think in my career on both sides of the fence, both as a trainer and an attorney, one of the things that I have found to be a real Achilles heel for a lot of people is the inability to listen. And when people can't listen, when people can't be good and effective listeners, what ends up happening is that people won't approach them, and they don't get the information that they need. They don't get the information that they really need to hear, even sometimes if it's bad news, to make decisions, to make appropriate decisions about things. And the third thing is communication, which I think listening is the biggest part of communication, but really making sure that you're talking to people, that people in the organization know you, that you're out there. I think those three things are things that people really tend to need and respect to be effective.
So as an attorney, you see cases, you see issues that happen when those three things don't occur. What are some of the things that you're seeing today that, you know, come forward from a legal perspective that employers are dealing with?
Well, you know, I had a client years ago who had a situation. He was running a small business, and he had a lot of people from not Native Americans working for them. And it was very labor intensive kind of work. And he had some people with language barriers. He had some people from that English wasn't their first language, and he tended sometimes to think about them as them. Rather than people that worked for me. And what ended up happening was that some of them perceived him as being almost abusive. I won't say totally abusive, but it tended to make him a little less sensitive, I think, to the needs of some of these folks. And I think it caused him to have some issues with employees. It really did. And I think, you know, it was making assumptions about people that were damaging and harmful.
Yeah, assumptions can be very dangerous, right, in terms of any leader believing that, you know, hey, just general talk, just general communication can be dangerous in terms of that. When you're talking about individuals that want a leader who's empathetic and who can listen, you know, there are some leaders out there, there are some HR people out there that are rolling their eyes right now and say, oh, dear God, we have to coddle these people. We have to do everything for them. Why can't it just be, hey, I'm giving them a really good job, and I'm paying them to do a job, right? I'm paying them to do a job. Why is that so necessary?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. When I was a young Dale Carnegie trainer, I had a guy in one of my classes. We were talking about motivation, right? And he said, there's this guy, he was about, oh, I would say he's about 60 years old then, and he was kind of an old, he was in the program, but he was kind of a hostage, kind of a resistant guy. And he said, you know, he said, I have a perfect motivation plan for our organization. He says, by God, no matter what happens, no matter how well people have done their jobs or how badly they've done their jobs, every Friday I still give them a paycheck. And he really believed that was all he needed to do. But as we were working through the process, he began to realize some of the things he wasn't doing, you know, and some of the, you know, that caring for people or we're not talking about kumbaya moments here, but we're just talking about treating people like people, not thinking about them as equipment, not thinking about them as liabilities, but starting to think about them as assets. And I remember one evening in the program, he was talking, and he actually had a tearful moment. He got tears in his eyes telling this story about this young woman that worked for him and how she had really become he had never really considered her a person, and how he had had this breakthrough with her, and how he saw her performance improve because of the way he had been talking to her, he had been treating her, and it was a real eye opener for him.
You know, it's interesting. I think there is a generational shift a little bit here. I think there is a little bit of a mind shift, but there is a perspective sometimes that You know, some of the younger generation just is expecting it all to be about them. I find that's not necessarily true in terms of, you know, from the people that we interact with.
Right.
They just want to achieve things. Yes, they want to achieve them faster, and technology today has changed the way that people think. You can get answers to anything within three seconds. As a matter of fact, who would have thought that to get a Keurig coffee, a cup of coffee, 15 seconds was a long time now,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It takes a long
yeah.
time, 15 yeah. whole seconds to get a cup of coffee. It's just become that instantaneous answers that we have to have. Do you see that as well when you're dealing with employers out there in the workplace, that their timeline of tolerance has changed?
I think that employers, when you're talking about the newer, especially the
millennials,
the younger
yeah.
generation, I think that some of them see them as a challenge rather than seeing the way I think they ought to see them, as just, hey, this is the generation we have, and they're smart, motivated people. Let's see what we can do to make the most of it, to make the best of the situation. I think that one of the things that I think is really important, we talked earlier about empathy and we talked about that. One of the things that people, I think, need to understand, it's not a matter of being coddled. I think it's a matter of, we have a generation now that was raised to think independently, but to also think as part of the group. You know, the interesting thing about this millennial generation is that leadership is important to them, but so is followership. They, being a good group member, being a good participant in a group, is something that I think is more important to younger workers today. I happen to have two of them in my own family, you know, I tell people that are baby boomers that are complaining about this, I said, you know, that's the way you raised them. That's the way we raised them. And so I think that's an important thing for people to keep in mind. I think Tom Brokaw has made the comment that he thinks this generation, this millennial generation, is the next great generation. He thinks that you know, people complain about them a lot and everything, but that they're actually the group that are going to really take on the world and take on some of the world's huge problems and make a difference. So,
well, you know, as we all know, every generation complains about the next generation.
Right.
That's historically documented. It really doesn't matter what generation is out there. And now we have the Gen Zs that are starting to come in now, another new generation, right, that's coming in 17, 18-year-old already.
Yeah. Well, I'm a baby boomer, and I remember as a kid, you know, my father and mother both saying, you know, the trouble with you kids today is that you don't know how to work, and you don't want to work, and you don't want to do that. And
shut off that rock and roll.
Yeah,
turn that
yeah,
stuff
yeah,
off.
And go get a haircut. You know,
yeah.
All of those things were important. And I find, you know, people say, my gosh, I've become my father, I've become my mother. But every generation talks that way about the preceding generation. And I always tell people, I often talk in my training programs, I often will make the joke. I'll say, you know, the one thing I'm absolutely certain of is that if I were standing in this room 40 years from now and doing this same training, there would be a bunch of millennials who would be in their mid-50s by then saying, you know, the problem with the new generation, it's a thing that we just pass on. And
it's
so,
true.
Yeah.
It's very true. And you know, technology has certainly exacerbated the problem in terms of, you know, I remember as a speaker, you know, you could say almost anything, and now people will Google what you say.
That's right.
Right, immediately to say, excuse me, you said 13% of the population. It's actually 12.638, right, to be able to correct you mid-sentence. So you do have to – and I'm not saying that's wrong, by the way. I actually think it's probably – nice that we can actually validate right mid-sentence what's going on, but it does create an interesting challenge for employers because no matter what they say or do, somebody can immediately go to their phone and check no matter what it mm-hmm. is in terms of rate of pay, law, you know, how the leadership is supposed to be. All these things can be immediately Googled.
Yes, and that creates several challenges, not only for – I remember in my profession as a lawyer, that's a huge issue now because our clients are –
quarterback lawyers?
They're Monday morning quarterbacks.
Yeah.
They call in and they tell you, well, aren't you going to do this? You know, I read in Google or I read, you know, online somewhere that this is what you're supposed to do. And, it can be really, really challenging. I had a client in a case a few years ago. It was a serious personal injury case, and he was online all the time, looking about and kind of second guessing me at times, and not kind of second guessing me. He was second guessing me, and I remember there was one situation. He insisted that I hire a particular expert in the case because that's what everybody did in the case. And I really believed very strongly that this kind of an expert, he wanted me to hire a vocational expert to come in and talk about what he could do and couldn't do and how his limitations. And I never saw the case that way. I didn't think that was you're 42% disabled in your back or something like that. I thought this was more of a before and after kind of case. And one of the things that was a real challenge, though, was getting him to buy into that idea that, no, we don't want this witness. And he had good evidence. He's reading stuff online written by, brilliant lawyers and experts talking about this. And here I am going up against that, trying to communicate with him. So.
We're talking with Bill Vickerson, attorney at law for Irwin, Tardy & Morris, and we're having discussion about what I would call life lessons, right?
Yes.
Life lessons from someone who has been able to do quite a bit in their career. So so congratulations for that.
Thank you.
One of the things that we're talking about here is the challenges that employers face, right? And it's different today than
yes.
ever before. As an attorney, harassment, retaliation are all the buzzwords today.
Yes.
What did you see employers thinking about as to combat this? They do training, they do all those things, all important, all required. What are some of the real things they can do to help solve these problems?
Well, getting back to the situation that we talked about earlier with empathy and listening. My experience has been as a lawyer representing employees that most employees like to do a good job. Most of them are not inherently lazy or crazy. There are notable exceptions to that rule, but for the most part, they aren't. And so one of the places I think employers get themselves into trouble is that they see anybody that comes in with an injury, anybody that comes in with a complaint, they see that instead of trying to deal with that real issue and saying, how can we fix this, a lot of them immediately go into defensive mode on that. Now, in your audience, I can hear the HR professionals rolling their eyes and going, well, of course we have to go into defensive mode. But what I'm saying is not go into defensive mode in the way that this is a potential claim, but going into it and saying, this is an issue that we need to resolve and we need to work with because this is important. I had a case a couple of years ago where a client of mine had a very serious issue with allergies. She worked for a very large company, and she was very sensitive to nuts. And so sensitive to nuts that if she was sitting in a room with a Reese's peanut butter cup wrapper in the wastebasket, she could actually start having a rash and go into shock. I mean, she was that plagued
by
it.
Yeah.
The people she worked for, the company, rather than saying, let's figure out a way to make this safer for her, they ended up making her the problem. We can't have peanut butter sandwiches here anymore because, she's got to – we got to watch out for her. And they really kind of – they made her the enemy. And – that's the wrong approach to this. I mean, it started with the whole we can't thing. We can't do this because of her. We can't do this. And so instead of people thinking about it in a more positive way, how can we not cause this to happen? How can we help her? I think companies need to really be more focused on that. That's not easy to do, by the way. That's easy for me to sit here, you and I talking, and easily say that. It's not easy to do that, and I'm not arguing that it is, but I think it begins a lot of times, these problems begin a lot of times with the attitude of looking at people as problems rather than as opportunities.
We're talking with Bill Vickerson, attorney at law for Irwin, Tardy & Morris. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLP 100.5 FM. We will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
At 154 years old, Veral Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Veral Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Veral Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at veraldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and maine.dalecarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Bill Vickerson, attorney at law at Irwin, Tardy & Morris. They're a law firm right here in the state of Maine. They do employment law as well as a lot of other different law out there. We'll talk about that a little bit at the end. Bill, we were talking before we went to break about sexual harassment or harassment in general. We were talking about how employers can avoid this issue or avoid retaliation, which is, again, even a bigger issue in terms of it. And I'm going to stick on the retaliation side for a second right now, because this, as you know, is the biggest thing happening right now. From an employment standpoint, yes. The numbers are staggering nationwide, the number of claims of retaliation out there. And you can certainly understand why. People are people, right? And so when somebody throws something at you, you sometimes throw back, or you sometimes have a reaction. And, of course, employers would say, we're trying not to react, but, you know, they started it first, right? They started the issue. They created the issue. How can employers look at, when they have these challenges, how can they prevent, well, how can they lessen retaliation? Because I argue to a degree, it's very hard to prevent retaliation. You can lessen it, but people are still people.
That's right. It's a human reaction that we often see when people are retaliating. And one of the things that I think is important, there are a couple of things that I think that we were talking earlier today about leaders being managers and that situation. One of the things that I think is really important, and I think one thing, if I were advising a company, by the way, I have a lot of small and medium-sized businesses that I do represent, and so frequently people call me about this stuff, and how do we not look this way? And one of the things that's very important is that people are people thing. You need to say, well, you're a person, but you're also a manager here, and you're also somebody that needs to get your arms around this thing. And so your gut reaction is often to, you know, oh, she's done this before, and we're not going to take this and all that, or he's done this, or that's him just. And you as a manager, you as a leader, HR people as well, you really need to fight to get past that. And you need to fight that attitude in your people, too. You know, you may have the worst employee in the world, constant complainer, constant troublemaker. You cannot allow that culture to develop around that person. Oh, that's, you know, that's David being David. You know, you that Manny being Manny thing. You can't allow that to happen. And when people get that way, I think one of the things we need to do is recognize that that emotion is out there and really important. One of the things I counsel my business clients a lot, and places that I have seen, it's not exactly retaliation, but I think it's motivated by the same spirit that motivates retaliation. A lot of times people will fight unemployment claims, for example. And I always advise my clients, in almost every situation, you know, don't do that. That's a bad place to go. Not because it's retaliation. It's just that it's a place for someone that works for you to say something that's going to come back at you, that's going to be discoverable or going to be seen or going to be heard later down the line. I had a case recently that I settled for. I was representing the employee in this case. He really did not have a terribly good case. It wasn't much of a case. In fact, when he first came to me with it, I didn't want it. He said, you know, I'm going to go apply for unemployment. I said, yeah, you certainly should do that because you're not working. He'd been fired. And he thought he had been fired wrongfully. And I said, he said, go apply for unemployment. His company made the decision that they were going to go all in on defending this unemployment case. Well, what ended up happening is that he went in there and told his side of the story, and the woman from HR, who should have known better, rather than just saying they wanted to prove that they fired him for cause so that they wouldn't have to pay, rather than that's what they wanted to do. That's what they wanted to establish.
Sure, of course they do. Yeah.
And so she went in and all in on this guy, and she brought up stuff from 5 years ago, and she started saying things. This is the personnel lady saying things that actually weren't true. And we ended up settling this case favorably for him 4 years down the road, using a lot of the dumb things that got said by the personnel lady in the unemployment hearing. And so to me, that's just a tactical way that I think companies need to be very careful about retaliation. The other place you need to be careful with retaliation is I see a lot of retaliation cases on both sides where you have people with some kind of disability and they need extra time off or they need some kind of accommodation. And what often ends up happening is that the person will become an issue, you know. Oh, you know, we could do this, but, well, it's just like the lady with the peanuts. We can't have a Christmas party this year because, you know, we can't bring in Snickers bars. So, you know, any or Halloween, we can't have a Halloween party because you can't bring in. And that problem that she ended up having started with a culture issue. It started when people started talking that way and nobody reined it in. Nobody said, wait a minute, hold it. I mean, I think, again, that's a listening thing, and that's where we have to say, listen,
well, you know, it's funny you brought up culture. So culture is that touchy-feely thing that everybody knows exists but has a hard time sometimes wrapping themselves around, right, of what it is. But every organization has a culture. Sometimes you define it in a mission statement or core values, which most organizations have. But sometimes it's just hard to take. And sometimes when you're having a small organization, right, and maybe it was started by a founder or two brothers or two sisters, and they build it from there. Things change as you get larger, and things change as you get more corporate, if you want to say. And people have a hard time with those changes.
They really do. I have seen that several times where people, on both sides of my career, as a trainer and as an attorney, you're right. The mom and pop store, or the two brothers that start the business in the garage, and you know they swear at each other and they tell the dirty jokes, and you know maybe there's someone in there that's like that. And then as they get bigger and bigger, that doesn't change, and they get into all kinds of problems with that. You know, and so I do think that's important. That's one of the things that I think you really need to talk about. I know I have one business that's getting bigger and bigger. And again, it was one of these things that started pretty small. And, you know, people, you have to talk to them. You know,
yeah.
And say, look, you need to get some HR people in here. You need to get some help here because, you know, you're making decisions here that are.
Well, and it's hard, right? Because part of what they're saying is our culture is part of our success. Right, especially when this, well, we grew up this way, You know, for the last 3 to 5 years, we've been 4 or 5 people, and we talk like we talk, and I don't want to mess that up. I don't want to screw up the culture here, right? And now we bring in people that change the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you balance that? How do you talk about that from a balanced perspective?
Well, one of the things that we talk about, and I often do this on the trainer side too, is, you know, one of the things that you have to recognize is that it isn't you don't have 5 people anymore in the company. It's a different organization. And so your organization has already changed dramatically, you know. And one of the things when you look at when you hear people, they say all this political correctness, right? Well, do you really want people in your organization throwing the F-bombs around? Do you really want people calling people the N-word? I mean, do you really want that going on in your organization? And if you're a guy, I guess, that uses those words all the time, you know, first of all, I don't think you're going to last very long. Forget all the harassment laws. Forget all the legalities of it. People aren't going to want to work for a person like you. If you're going to be that kind of person and you're going to say that kind of stuff and allow that kind of stuff to go on, even if none of this stuff is illegal, people aren't going to want to stay there. And so one of the challenges you're facing, especially now, we're in a, what, 2.5-3% unemployment?
Correct.
You know, getting good employees and keeping good employees is a huge challenge for any organization. So you're going to be competing with people out there that don't have this kind of culture. And so I think that's an important thing for people to learn and understand. And most people, if they have any kind of brains, and I think most successful business people do, they just recognize that, look, they can look at it as a market trend, they can look at it as whatever, but they got to recognize that that's just not the way people view the world anymore.
Well, you know, you're talking about when a company grows and they need HR and they need development, they need leadership development at that point, right? And really, you're talking about how to deal with people. And that's part of the trainer side that you talk about,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Well, I was talking about the older guy that I had in class. I call him an older guy. I'm probably older than he is now, but I mean but he had that attitude, and he recognized that for his business, he was in this program because other people had suggested that he be in our program, and he didn't see it at first, but he was smart enough, as curmudgeonly as he was at the time, he was smart enough to recognize and listen to people around him to at least give this a shot, and I think he learned a lot, and I think it really changed fundamentally the way things.
And I think that's a good point, right? No matter how old you are,
right,
no matter what position you are, no matter where you are in your career, your personal growth matters.
It does.
Right? It really matters. No matter how smart you are, no matter what product you make, mm-hmm. no matter how many people, you're going to meet people that you don't necessarily agree with or deal with, and mm-hmm. are going to have to learn how to deal with them.
Yeah. That's right. In my office, in my law firm, about 6 months ago, I was talking to a couple of our paralegals who were both 20-somethings. And I said, look at this. I got a Snapchat from my daughter. And one of them said, Bill, you Snapchat? And I said, we were kind of joking about that. And I said, well, I get snaps. I don't send a lot, but I get them. And I said, I do it for 2 reasons. I said, one is that, you know, it's how I stay in touch with my kids. And I, you know, I want to stay in touch with my kids because I love them. And I want them still in my life. And this is part of what they are and what they do. And so I want to stay in touch. The other thing, though, is it's part of the real world now. It's part of who we are. And so, you know, people that say I don't send emails or I don't send faxes or whatever. I mean, that's a competence issue if you're in business now. You know, the idea that I don't do voicemail or I don't do, I mean, that's a competence issue. And I think people, older people in the workplace, I think they have to look at it that way. I don't think it's a, you know, that's good for the youngins. That's a competence.
No, it really is a core competency today
yeah.
of any organization, of any person. You know, we're talking with Bill Vickerson, attorney at law for Irwin, Tardy & Morris. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, a news talk, WLOB 100.5 FM. And we'll be right back.
At 100.5 At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and maine.dalecarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Bill Vickerson, attorney at law at Irwin, Tardy & Morris. They're a law firm here in Portland, Maine, and also across the state of Maine that does employment law as well as other types of legal assistance. Bill, you know, we've talked a lot today about what employers can be thinking about to help them and some of the life lessons that you've provided. Do you have a story of someone that you think about that really has learned a lesson the hard way sometimes, but at the end they came out and really became a much better employer because of it?
I think so. You like to hope so. I had a case. I think it might have been in 40 years of practicing law the dumbest case that I was ever involved in. And you initially hear this and you laugh about it, but this happened to a client of mine. She ran a restaurant in northern Maine in a small town. It was a seasonal business, so people come and go. And she had one young woman that she hired. And the woman came in and worked two or three shifts and then left. And she was having dinner, having lunch with a couple of friends in another restaurant on the other side of town. And she sees this young woman in the restaurant, and she says pretty loudly at the table, "That woman used to work for us. She's a complete ditz." One of the other waitresses overheard that and went back and told this woman. And she confronts her in the restaurant. She says, what are you doing? And she said, it's my opinion. You know, she's kind of...
Yeah, it's my opinion. It's a First Amendment. I can say what I want.
Kind of doubling down on that.
Yeah.
This woman sued her. And she sued her for defamation that she said in a public place that this woman was unprofessional in her career because she called her a ditz, and it affected her ability, she argued, would affect her ability in the future to get a job in the waitressing field, but more so it made it look like it was, it made it look like she was some kind of an unreliable person. I thought the case was kind of crazy because I think it was true. Not that she was in fact a ditz, but I thought that she was justified in saying what she said because this woman had just, walked off the job essentially for no reason, wasn't terribly effective, terribly good at it while she was there, and she made that comment. But she ended up getting sued over that. We ended up going to mediation over that, and she had an errors and omissions policy, and they ended up paying. So she kept saying they ended up paying a lot of money. She kept saying I want to fight this all the way to the end. Finally, at mediation, I said to her, you really want to keep doing this? You want to litigate this all the way to the end? And she finally realized it was going to take enormous amount of, even though it wasn't going to cost her a lot of money, I talked myself out of a pretty good fee, probably. But even though she wasn't going to lose a lot of money, she was going to lose a lot of time and everything. And I said to her afterwards, I said, "What are you doing here?" And she said, "I realize I've got to stop being so darn judgmental. When she quit, I took it very personally. I took it very personally, and I was angry. And I got to realize that people make these decisions all the time, and it's not because of me. It's not about me. It's probably something else she had going on in her life or something." And so I said, "And you carry that attitude around with you about people. You know, you're going to get yourself in this sort of thing." And you asked me earlier, Dave, about retaliation. And one of the things that gets a lot of people in retaliation is that they make it about themselves. And most of the time when people are even performing badly in a situation, it's not about the boss. It's not about the manager. It's not about the company. It's about the person who's performing badly. And I think one of the biggest causes of problems in organizations is people take this stuff personally rather than just letting it go.
And that's so true, Bill. You know, I said it before in the last segment, people are human, right? And so emotion, as hard as it is to take out of business, is sometimes the reason why people are so successful in business, right? Passion, drive,
yes.
Success, harnessing the energy of the team, harnessing the energy of yourself to drive it forward. At the same time, the downside of that is passion, energy,
right?
Drive, which sometimes can blind you to everything else that is going on around you, and realizing that, you know, I used the example before when we did an outplacement. You know, CMA
yes.
did an outplacement for a company who had was closing here in Maine, and it was a factory, and 75 jobs were being lost, unfortunately, and we were in the position of helping and assisting in that outplacement. And that individual, as we were going through the process, one of the individuals came into the office having just being told that they were going to be losing their job, and I believe it was 20 days. And I remember sitting down with him and saying, how you doing? How'd you take the news? What's going on? And he goes, "Well, I'll be honest with you, I'm not doing very well." I said, "Okay." You know, not surprised by the answer. But he said, "This week alone," this was a Thursday when this was announced, "this week alone, I found out my daughter has cancer. I found out that I got a lien on my house because we can't afford to do other things. And yesterday, my wife left me."
Wow.
"And so now today, you're telling me that I'm going to also lose my job." And at that moment, you realize that it really is about the individual person. And, you know, we immediately, I immediately at that point realized that this was going to require a lot more support than just your typical standard outplacement.
That's right.
And luckily we have a psychologist on our team that came and was there and was able to help him, and we got all the services and provided him all that. But that's an example that I provide that, you know, you just don't know what's going on in people's lives behind the scenes when they walk in every day. Right? You just don't know. And when you talk about training and human behavior and human relation principles, it really does matter to that individual.
It absolutely does. One of the things that I tell people, because a lot of people say, "Well, you know, there was a thought process, or there was a theory in management," I'm going to say it was 25 years ago or so, where people thought, you know, we want to keep the emotional side out of this. I remember that very much.
Yeah. It was don't show any.
Yeah, don't show any and don't care. You know, that's just strictly business, that type of thing. And organizations found that they were, you know, productivity was going down. It was a very bad place for them to be, because people are creatures of emotion, and they tend to react that way. And so I think the new trend today, I know in a lot of our training, we talk about and really advocate that people get to know their employees better, get to understand them on a much more personal level. And that is counterintuitive to a lot of people who have been raised through this whole management psyche of, you know, oh no, leave it be, don't be personal with people, don't go there. I think though that the better you know people, the easier it's going to be. This fellow you were talking about here, let's assume that his it wasn't a layoff situation. Let's just assume that his numbers were down, that his performance was down. A manager that cared, that had that kind of empathy, would recognize that this is a person that maybe we need to talk to him or her a little. It was him, right? Need to talk to him a little differently and think about that, and you can avoid a lot of issues. I think you can avoid a lot of issues with that.
No, you really can. And it all talks about connecting and getting to know your people. We're talking with Bill Vickerson, attorney at Irwin, Tardy & Morris. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by cmacareer.com and main.dalecarnegie.com. Today we've been talking with Bill Vickerson. He's an employment attorney with Irwin, Tardy & Morris. And I should be clear, you're more than just an employment attorney. You're a general attorney, but you do employment law.
I do most of the employment law in the firm, yes, but we also do we do family law, you know, divorces, and we do estate planning and estates and wills. We do workers' compensation. We do general litigation, contract disputes, that sort of thing. So we're pretty broadly covered. As I said, we have offices in four different parts of the state. So we like to think we can cover everybody's needs. And I always tell people, if it's something we don't handle, we can certainly send you to someone who can help you. So yeah, we invite you to give us a call.
Certainly at the end of this show, you'll be able to go to hrpowerhour.com and you'll be able to connect with Bill directly. We will have his information up there and make sure that you're able to connect with him directly from there. So, you know, we've talked about a lot of stuff today, Bill, and I appreciate you coming on today and talking about what I would call some life lessons of what is really you've seen out there in the world. Two final questions.
Okay.
One has to do with, what do you think are like three takeaways that somebody should really think about when they listen to this show today? What were the three things that someone should, as an employer, really take away?
I think one is that I think you should hire CMA.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you. I'm all for that.
Okay. Actually, one of the things that I think is really significant is that you really need to try and honestly be conscious of your humanity, because you're dealing with human beings. And I think if people could start seeing employees as what they are, company assets and not liabilities, I think that mindset change is really important. And I say change. I don't think every organization thinks of their employees that way. But I think that you need to be conscious of that. The other thing that I think needs to happen is that when people present themselves, employees seem to be difficult. Again, communication is a huge issue. I think that really making an attempt to find out what's going on with the person and not just assuming that they're a problem and not just assuming that they're doing what they're doing to be difficult, I think is really a second thing. The third thing is the lesson that your parents probably taught you when you were a little kid, and that is that when somebody says something negative to you, when somebody does something, and you feel yourself getting really angry, you know, count to 10 before you do something, or really think before you act, because I find that one of the things that has really brought people through my door, disgruntled employees, is that it seems oftentimes that it's that initial reaction that, you know, people get that bad vibe right away. And I think it's important to recognize that you're not going to do that, to put that aside. So I think those three rules really all employers should really make an effort to do that. Again, not easy.
No, it never is easy.
But something to keep in mind, though.
The last question. What do you love so much about being a Dale Carnegie trainer?
One of the things that I have always found is that no matter how often I do it, every group is new, every group is fresh, and you hear something that you've never heard before. You know, you learn things. I've always been a person, I like other people. I've always been good at, I think, getting along with and talking to other people. And it gives me an opportunity to play a very positive role in people's lives. I say I'm playing the role. The process is playing the role, but it's just nice to be part of that. To see people really able to do things. I had a very young man in one of my most recent programs. He was a middle school kid, and just afraid of his own shadow. And by the end of the program, he was standing up and talking and taking chances in a group full of adults. And, you know, you don't get very many opportunities in life to have an experience like that. And I just think that I get to make a positive impact as an attorney, but every time I walk into a Dale Carnegie classroom, I get a chance to make a positive impact on people and make that happen. And I really love that.
Thank you so much, Bill, for your time today. I appreciate you sharing your stories and sharing what, you know, you've done to help make a difference. And we appreciate you being on the show.
Thanks for having me on.
And now your HR tip of the week. Your HR tip of the week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Hi, this is Tawny Alvarez from VeralDana. Close your eyes and think back to the last time you had a corporate or office party. Was alcohol involved? Did the company provide the alcohol to guests? If so, what steps, if any, did the company take to minimize the risks associated with alcohol consumption by employees? Were a multitude of non-alcoholic options available? Was food also provided for the event? Were designated drivers, taxis, Ubers, or other public transportation made available for employees who may have overindulged and/or who should not have been operating a vehicle? Did the company lay out expectations and standards prior to the event itself? There are a multitude of ways in which liability can be reduced without decreasing the amount of fun that partygoers will have. To further discuss best practices for hosting employer-sponsored events where alcohol will be available, contact a member of VeralDana's Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, Karen Friedman, author, communicator, and speaker, is our guest. And we're going to be talking about her book, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Lessons, Leadership Insights from Everyday Encounters. We are surrounded by strangers, the people next to us on the bus, those who interact for a moment in the store, taxi drivers, front desk employees, people we meet at the gym, doctors, and so on. Though we don't often realize it, in the moment, we can learn something from every single one of them. So listen to us next week on the HR Power Hour. Talk about this great book. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.